Hello, my spooky friends. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that inspired pop culture movies and shows we know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and today we're going to be talking about the Alphabet Killer. Have you heard of him? This case is a twisted one and still remains unsolved. Listener's discretion is advised. So the Alphabet Murders, also known as the Double Initial Murders, are an unsolved series of child murders which occurred between 1971 and 1973 in Rochester, New York. Now, the reason why it's also known as the double initial murders was because all three of the victims had names beginning with the same letter as the victim's last name. The Murders. On November 16, 1971, at 4:20 p.m., a 10-year-old Puerto Rican child named Carmen Colon disappeared while returning home from an errand in Rochester, New York. Now, according to eyewitness, Carmen went to the pharmacy her grandmother told her to visit on West Main Street, but left the store since her grandma's prescription wasn't ready. She kept telling the store owner, I gotta go. And then she was seen entering a car that was parked close to the pharmacy, but that was gonna be the last time anyone saw her alive. Carmen was reported missing to Rochester PD at 7:50 p.m. About an hour after she left the pharmacy, a few motorists were riding along I-490, and saw her naked from the waist down, running from a car that was coming in reverse that they believed to be a dark-colored Ford Pinto hatchback. And they claimed to see her, like, waving her arms around frantically and shouting, trying to get attention of a passing vehicle. One eyewitness even claimed they saw Carmen being submissively led back to the vehicle by her abductor. Like, dude, you didn't do anything? 2 days later, two teenage boys discovered Carmen's partially naked body in a gully not far from I-490 and close to the village of Churchville, which was 12 miles from where she was last seen alive. Her coat was discovered in a culvert some 300 feet from her body. Her trousers were only discovered on November 30th, close to the service road near where numerous motorcycles had seen her attempting to escape her abductor. Like, I'm so glad that you witnessed the abduction, sir. Did you feel the need to stop it at any point in time? An autopsy revealed that in addition to having been raped, she also suffered from a fracture to her skull and one of her vertebrae before she had been manually strangled to death, and her body showed extensively scratched by fingernails. Police interrogated several suspects in the months following Carmen's murder. All were cleared of any involvement. And by December 21st, the number of investigators assigned to this case on a full-time basis were decreased to 3. In early 1972, 5 billboards were set up alongside major Rochester expressways. Each had an 8-foot-high picture of, you know, Carmen with the headline, "Do you know who killed Carmen Colon?" They offered a $6,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest and conviction of Carmen's murder or murderers. In addition to displaying the hotline and postal address, this tactic generated several new leads, but all failed to bear fruit. 17 months later, on April 2nd, 1973, at approximately 5 p.m., an 11-year-old Wanda Wolowitz disappeared from the east side of Rochester while returning home from an errand. You would think that after what happened with the first child, more parents would be like, okay, we need to go together or use the buddy system, but just saying. According to the owner of the store, she was instructed to visit and buy groceries, and at 5:15, she began walking home alone down Conkey Avenue. Wanda was reported missing by her mother Joyce at 8 p.m. So police immediately launched an intense search to find and locate Wanda, and almost 50 detectives searched several miles around the shop where she was last seen, her home, and along Genesee River, where she'd like to play, but nobody found her. Several neighborhood residents recalled seeing Wanda, like, struggling to carry the groceries and was just walking north of Avenue B. 3 classmates said they saw her, you know, bracing the bag against a fence so she can improve her grip, as they saw a brown vehicle drive past her. Now, the following day at 10:15 a.m., a police officer found Wanda's fully clothed body discarded along an access road to State Route 104 in Webster, which is about 7 miles from Rochester. The position of her body indicated that she had likely been thrown from a moving vehicle, with her body rolling down the embankment. Her autopsy revealed that she had been sexually assaulted before being manually strangled from behind, with most likely a belt, since she had several defensive wounds, which indicated she did try to fight off her murderer. The autopsy also revealed traces of semen and pubic hair upon her body, as well as several strands of white cat fur on her clothes, which her family did not own a pet with that fur color. Just like Carmen's case, investigators established, an anonymous telephone hotline in addition to offering an award of $10,000 for any information leading to the arrest and conviction of Wanda's murderer. Now, here come the eyewitnesses. They informed investigators they saw Wanda, walking home from the store on the evening of April 2nd. And the eyewitness said that he saw her standing along the passenger door of a large brown vehicle, talking to the driver. I'm sorry, but if you're an adult and you see a child you recognize with a stranger, don't you feel the need to investigate? Just saying, this could have probably been avoided. Although the eyewitness wasn't able to get a good look at the driver, he did tell police that he was just 0.2 miles from Wanda's home. Another witness came forward and told police that she saw a man forcing a red-haired girl, matching Wanda's description, into a light-colored Dodge Dart on Conkey Avenue between 5:30 and 6 p.m., the night of her disappearance. The Rochester Police Department dismissed any suggestion of a link between the murders of Carmen and Wanda, and after a TV special about the murders, police received about 200 leads from the public, but once again, none were useful. Did not want to connect the dots here. Hello, similarities in the cases. On November 26, 1973, about 7 months later, another 11-year-old girl named Michelle Manzina was reported missing by her mother, Carolyn, after she failed to come home from school. Michelle was last seen by her classmates at 3:20 p.m., walking alone to a shopping plaza near her school with the intention of getting her mom's purse, since her mom left it there earlier. 10 minutes later, a witness said they saw Michelle sitting in the passenger seat of a beige or tan vehicle driving at high speed on Ackerman Street before turning onto Webster Avenue, and the witness claimed that, she was crying. Did anyone think to call police? No, not until after the fact. On November 26th at 5:30 p.m., a motorist saw a man standing by a large, beige or tan vehicle with a flat tire, parked alongside Route 350 in Walworth, and hiding a girl he believed to be Michelle by the wrist. Now, the motorist stopped and offered to help them, but the abductor grabbed her and pushed her behind his back. The motorist said that he felt compelled when the individual started staring at him with a menacing look on his face, and he was like, nope, I'm out. But unfortunately, he failed to get the license plate and drove away. If you see somebody with that serial killer look, you're like, yeah, all of the no. On November 28th at 10:30 a.m., Michelle's fully clothed body was discovered lying face down in a ditch alongside a town called Mayston, which was 15 miles from Rochester. Her autopsy revealed extensive blunt force trauma to her body, in addition to that she had been raped before being strangled to death from behind with a ligature, possibly a thin rope. Investigators also discovered numerous strands of, again, white cat fur on her clothing and leaf samples within one of her clenched hands, indicating that she was killed at or near the location where she was found. They also found a partial palm print on her neck and traces of semen on her body, on her underwear, that determined she was attacked by one individual. There are reports of a girl matching Michelle's description as being seen in the company of a Caucasian man with dark hair between the ages of 25 to 35, who is 6 feet tall, weighing about 165 pounds. They were last seen at a fast food restaurant in Penfield at 4:30 p.m. the day of her disappearance, and alongside Route 350
approximately 1 hour later.
The investigation.
Following the murder of Michelle, investigators released a composed and drawing of the individuals last seen with her, you know, by several eyewitnesses. They also set up another hotline devoted to the manhunt for the perpetrator, who they strongly suspected had committed all three murders, finally connecting the dots, and offered a reward for any information leading to the arrest and conviction of this murderer. Although authorities received several calls from the public, no credible suspect was located. Investigators interrogated more than 800 potential suspects in relation to the Alphabet murders. The perpetrator or perpetrator of the murders was never caught, and this case remains unsolved.
Suspects.
Now, in the case of Carmen, her uncle Miguel is considered by investigators to be a strong suspect in her murder. Now, Miguel was her father's brother, and after her parents separated, he began a relationship with Carmen's mother. Typically, when Carmen would go to the pharmacy to pick up her prescription, she'd usually be accompanied by her grandfather, Felix. But on the day of her disappearance, Carmen, like, asked, "Can I just walk alone? Just this once?" Now, weeks prior to the murder, Miguel purchased a car closely matching the vehicle seen by eyewitnesses, reversing upon Interstate 490 in pursuit of the child. Police did search his vehicle shortly after, you know, his niece's murder, and they found inside and outside of the car had been cleaned extensively. His excuse was saying that when he bought the car, they wouldn't clean it properly.
You know, if they didn't do it right, I gotta do it myself, officers.
They also found a doll belonging to Carmen in his car, which of course he'd say, "She rode in my car frequently, man. She must have left it." According to his friend, just 2 days after his niece's murder, Miguel told his friend that he was going to leave the country for he had done something wrong in Rochester. He moved from Rochester to Puerto Rico 4 days after Carmen was murdered.
Suspicious.
In March 1972, investigators traveled to San Juan to question Miguel, but thanks to local newspaper publishing articles on how the police intended to question him, he ran. On March 26, he surrendered and agreed to go back to Rochester to be questioned, and he could not provide a credible alibi, but they had no physical evidence located at the crime scene or in his car to link him to the murder. Miguel Colon committed suicide in 1991 at the age of 44 after an incident of domestic violence in which he shot and wounded both his wife and his brother. One individual considered a strong suspect in the Alphabet murders is a 25-year-old Rochester fireman named Dennis Termini. Dennis was a prolific serial offender known as the Garage Rapist, who was known to have committed a minimum of 14 rapes of teenage girls and young women between 1971 and 1973. He was also known to have owned a beige vehicle similar to the description of the one the eyewitnesses saw for the abductions. He also lived close to the area where victim Michelle was last seen alive. And 5 weeks after the final victim of the Alphabet murders on January 1st, 1974, Dennis attempted to abduct a teenage girl at gunpoint. Like, dude, you're already in deep shit. Why? He fled the scene when the girl refused to stop screaming. Shortly after, he abducted another potential victim, where he was pursued by police, ending in Dennis committing suicide by shooting himself in the head. Now, a forensic examination of his car did reveal traces of white cat fur in his upholstery. In January of 2007, his body was exhumed and collected a DNA sample to see if it matched with the semen samples recovered from Wanda's body. Although he was not responsible for her murder, he was not tested for the other two murders of Carmen and Michelle.
Like, why the hell not?
Another suspect in the Alphabet murders is a serial killer named Kenneth Bianchi, who at the time of the murders worked as an ice cream vendor in Rochester, and he was also known to have worked at locations close to the first two murder scenes and was known to be driven a vehicle in the same color and model as eyewitnesses have described for the abductions. Between 1977 and 1978, he and his cousin, Angelo Buono Jr., committed the Hillside Strangler murders of 10 girls and young women between the ages of 12 and 28. He was never charged with the Alphabet murders and denied any capability in the murders, and has actually asked police repeatedly to clear him of suspicion. He's like, hey, I'm a bad guy and I've done some shit. I didn't do that shit. Our last suspect. In April of 2011, a 77-year-old named Joseph Nasso was arrested in Reno, Nevada for the murders of four women in California committed between 1977 and 1994, all of whom are believed to be prostitutes, of each having the same initial for their first name as their last name. Joseph was a New York native who had lived in Rochester during the early 1970s and was known to have regularly traveled between New York and California. Authorities described him as a person of interest, but DNA confirmed that he was not a match, recovered from Wanda. On June 18, 2013, Joseph Nasso was brought to trial and charged with the Alphabet murders, and on November 22, 2013, he was sentenced to death. Our TikTok discovery. Oh yes, we're bringing TikTok into this, because on March 22nd of this year, a girl on TikTok named Alexis posted a video where it received nearly 620,000 views and 1,100 comments. Many from viewers who said that she might be the most recent person to solve an unsolved case online, for in her video, she believed that her grandfather might have been the Alphabet killer.
Oof.
She went into detail on how the victims had initials that had the same letter and how her aunt was good friends with Wanda and her grandfather also knew her. She also said that her grandfather owned a grocery store and he spoke with Wanda on the last day she was seen alive. Because remember, Wanda went to get groceries. Alexis also stated that eyewitnesses saw Wanda leaving from a store with groceries and she was talking to the driver of a brown vehicle, which she believed her grandfather may have owned. Now, each of the victims was found with white cat hair on their clothes. See, we could never get the answer for the cat hair. And Alexis said that there are often cats kept in the basement of the store to catch mice. I mean, she's got some points here, but this is where it gets juicy. Alexis then went on to explain that her grandfather was a suspect during the investigation. He was the first to offer a reward for any information regarding Wanda's disappearance. And when the unidentified body was found, he told people it was Wanda before it was even confirmed. She posted that video back in March, so I have no idea if we have an update. But sounded like Grandpa could have died potentially. I mean, it could have been her grandfather for maybe Wanda's murder, Miguel for Carmen's murder. But Michelle's murder, that's the mystery. I feel like Miguel Colon definitely killed his niece, just in my opinion. Maybe Alexis's grandfather could have been a potential suspect as well, but I don't know. This case still remains unsolved. Who do you think the Alphabet Killer was? And that concludes today's episode. Rest in peace to the poor victims of this case. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and don't forget to tune in next week for a new All Things Murder, if you dare. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget to check out my TikTok at Sinister Marissa.